All right, the next paper is presented by myself. I'd like to acknowledge the co-authors, Terry Wheeler, Wayne Keeling, and Jim Brodowski. Jim and Wayne have really initiated this project and unfortunately have started to see a little bit of increase in verticillium in those fields. So Terry and I have come in and tried to quantify some of the effects of the practices they're looking at on management of verticillium. This is again looking at the impact of irrigation, plant population, and crop rotation on verticillium wilt in cotton. Terry did a good job of introducing our pathogen. I'll try to briefly cover that and talk about some of the aspects of the cultural practices. Again, verticillium wilt is caused by the soil-borne fungus verticillium dallei. It is the most economically important disease of late on the southern high plains. This fungus infects early in the season. However, the symptoms typically result or observed later in the season after flowering once the water demand of that plant is increased and it's characterized by the necrosis and chlorosis that we see on the leaves here manifesting from the clogging of the vascular system of the fungus, and it basically constricts the plant's ability to maintain the proper water potential. As these symptoms develop, if the proper strains are in place, typically what we have on the southern high plains, severe defoliation can occur. This defoliation results in significant yield losses and also drastically disrupts micronair and other yield quality parameters such as uniformity and length, which often result in lower loan values, making with regard to some type of reduction in loan value. The fungus is capable of surviving extremely long periods of time by production of specialized overwintering structures, the microsclerotia, which are evident here in the lower left-hand corner on a potato tuber. Dr. Wheeler mentioned she's conducting an extensive sampling program to try to quantify some of the populations of this fungus in the soil. Currently, there are no chemical treatments that are available. As Terry alluded to, we have looked at a few fumigants in 2008. However, we had some pretty inconclusive results and not sure if that's going to be an economical option for our producers. And again, Terry has mentioned her cultivar screening program that she's established. Again, just to refresh your memory, this is the graph that she just showed looking at the relative yield, how the cotton varieties in our region perform. And what I've done here is just tried to highlight some of those varieties that are circled. Those are varieties that have that cover the range of performance with regard to verticillium wilt that were included in some of these subsequent studies we'll talk about. Talk about those specific varieties in more detail in a few minutes. The overall objective of this trial was to try to complement some of the work that Terry's done over the last several years and try to develop an integrated disease management system, looking at plant population, irrigation, and rotation effects on verticillium wilt. The methods and materials, the first trial was a cultivar by population study, plant population study. The trial was conducted in the same field where Dr. Wheeler had conducted her variety trial in the Floyd County site. That site was quantified to have 7.5 microsclerotia per cc of soil, planted on April 30th with a cone planter. The treatments that we looked at consisted of two, four, and seven seed per foot, including the varieties, the resistant tolerant variety Fibromax 9063 B2F, AFD 5065 B2F or RF as an intermediate, and then the susceptible Americot 1532 B2RF. This was a randomized complete block arrangement with four replications. Again, stand counts were taken after stands were established. Disease incidence was recorded throughout the season, August 1st, August the 18th, and the 28th. And we used those values to determine the area under disease progress curve. So with these values, the higher the number, the more relative disease was in those plots. It's a accumulation of the values of disease. So the higher that value, the more disease that we've seen. Plots were harvested on October 28th. And then ginned, and we have loan values that we've applied to those to look at some economic values. We analyzed all the data using PROC and NOVA, and significant levels are at the 5% level. So here we have the results from that trial. Again, on the far left-hand side of the slide, we see the cultivar, and then below that, the subsequent seeding rates of 2, 4, and 7 seed per foot. Again, with the stand count on the second column, that being the percent of the planted seed. we can see that there was really no significant differences among the seeding rates with regard to the varieties we chose. With the exception of AmeriCop 1532, we did have substantial reductions with regard to that 7 seed per foot, where we had 68.6%. But all those, I think, are well above, with the exception of maybe that 1532 7 seed per foot, well above what we expect to see with regard to planting cotton in West Texas. With regard to disease development, again, those AUDPC values, the higher that value, the greater disease that we saw. Essentially, what we see here is when we start to look at reducing the number of plants per foot, we're increasing the incidence of disease within the field. I think there's a level there of where we're reducing the number of plants per foot, and the ability of those plants to become infected as an overall percentage of the plant stand is being evident. We can see that in all three cases, 2 seed per foot resulted in significantly higher disease ratings. As we increased plant populations, we tended to see less and less disease throughout the season. We saw similar trends with regard to, or converse trends with regard to yield, with regard to the 2 seed per foot. Typically, we see an increase in yield with regard to increasing the plant population, with the exception being with the AFD 5065 B2 Flex, where there was no statistical differences. I'll neglect to include the loan values. There were significant differences with regard to loan values. Those trends became evident whenever we calculated the overall net return. Again, on the x-axis here, we see FiberMax 9063, the AFD 5065, and then the AmeriCop 1532. On the y-axis, we have the net return in dollars per acre. These net returns are simply the yields times the loan value, subtracting the seed and technology fees. And again, we can see where we tried to reduce the amount of inputs by reducing seeding rates. That resulted in significantly lower net returns for two of the three varieties, our FiberMax 9063 and our AFD 5065. With regard to increasing the seeding rate, you can see there were no real differences between the 2 and 4 seed per foot. And with regard to our resistant check, we did see a significant increase between the 2 and the 7 seed per foot. However, the overall trend tends to lean toward favoring that 4 seed per foot instead of the 7. This is important with regard to producers trying to cut corners on production input costs. If you cut them too much, you can be hindering performance of those varieties and seeing a significant reduction in yield and then subsequently net returns. In addition to the seeding rate, we also looked at the irrigation by cultivar. We'll try not to spend too much time talking about the cultivars and focus on the irrigation. This trial was conducted at Halfway, Texas, at the Texas AgriLife Research Helms Farm. This was a split plot design with three replications. This was a large plot trial where the whole plot consisted of irrigation treatment of 50, 100, and 150% replacement of evapotranspiration rate. The subplots were cultivars, FiberMax 9063, AmeriCop 1664, Stoneville 45, 54, and Delta Pine 117, all which have varying performance with regard to verticillium wilt. This slide illustrates the impact of irrigation on the development of verticillium wilt, and this is very important for us because irrigation is such a limiting factor in West Texas. And we see a really nice relationship between the amount of irrigation that is applied throughout the season and the amount of disease that is recorded here, representing mid-August, I believe. So with regard to the 50% evapotranspiration, that had significantly lower, barely detectable levels of verticillium wilt. However, where we increase that irrigation to 100% evapotranspiration rate, we see a significant increase up to the order of about 10%. However, as we try to compensate for our dry climate and add additional yield, where we add 150% evapotranspiration rate, we see a subsequent increase with regard to verticillium wilt. Conversely, we see a very nice relationship with regard to excess water and yield. With regard to yield for the 50 and 100% evapotranspiration rate, there are no significant differences, and yields were between 750 and 795 pounds per acre. However, what we do see is a significant reduction with that 150% evapotranspiration rate. There's no doubt that some of that is attributed to the development of verticillium wilt. However, this may be confounded. These results may be confounded by we received ample rainfall late in the season, and a lot of these plots in this 150% evapotranspiration rate treatment experienced a lot of vegetative growth, confounding the relationship between disease development and that impact on yield. But we're pretty confident that there was some impact, but it is not attributed entirely to verticillium wilt in this slide. At that same location, we tried to also quantify the effects of other management practices on verticillium wilt, primarily that same irrigation treatment with regard to the 50, 100, 150% ET irrigation regimes, and try to also look at the effect of rotation in addition to those different cultivars. The rotation schemes, due to limited ability to randomize those schemes, they're limited to specific fields or wedges within the field, as highlighted by the infrared graph or the infrared picture on the right. The rotation schemes that we have were a continuous cotton or the CCC rotation, a cotton-cotton sorghum rotation, and a cotton-sorghum-cotton rotation. The first split within each trial was, again, the irrigation treatment of 50, 100, 150% ET. And this trial, we did have subplots of different cultivars, the 104 B2RF and Stoneville 4554 B2RF. Again, with three replications and analyzed with analysis of variance. Again, large plots. Each plot ran the length of the wedge. Here we see a pretty complicated slide, but I'd like to try to identify what's going on here. Again, we have on the x-axis those irrigation treatments, trying to solidify this effect of irrigation on verticillium disease incidence. And we can see very nicely across the three different rotation schemes of cotton, sorghum, cotton, cotton, and continuous cotton, as you increase irrigation, you're seeing an increase in verticillium wilt with regard to those three different rotations. And I just averaged the percent incidence and labeled them here. With regard to the 50%, we see about 0.7% disease incidence increased to about 10.5% with the 100% ET, up to 15% with that 150% ET replacement. So that same trend is in effect that we saw in the previous study, indicating that irrigation can impact disease development. We see a similar trend with regard to the rotation aspect. When we look at the overall lint yield, we have the 50, 100, 150%. We'll look specifically at the rotation effects themselves. And here we see in all cases where we have the cotton, sorghum, cotton rotation in under all three irrigation regimes, averaged across both varieties or cultivars, we see that the cotton, sorghum, cotton rotation provided in all cases the numerically highest yields, and in all cases significantly better than the continuous cotton rotation. So indicating that there is economical benefit in using grain sorghum rotations with regard to production systems in verticillium wilt fields. This was actually surprising to Terry and I, because looking at the biology of verticillium wilt, as I've mentioned, the fungus can survive extremely long periods of time in the soil as microsclerotia, and we weren't sure how well the 1 year rotation aspect would work. We're very pleased. But we can see nice results in this first year study with regard to implementing sorghum into a rotation scheme. One other thing I'd like to point out is whenever you look at the yellow and the red bar, where you tend to get into, there's a numerical trend where you tend to get into more continuous cotton, cotton behind cotton, 3 year cotton systems. We do see a trend toward decreasing yield, which may be indicated by the effect on verticillium. So in summary, cultivar selection is the cornerstone for management of verticillium wilt. Resistant or tolerant, high yielding cultivars are available. Lower plant populations result in higher disease incidence. Producers should be reluctant to reduce seeding rates, and optimum seeding rates for this study were found to be about 4 seed per foot. Increasing irrigation does favor disease development. Disease incidence increased with irrigation overall. Yields were lowest for the 150% ET irrigation treatment. However, vegetative growth, because of those late season rain events, may have confounded that. The fungus can survive long periods of time in the soil. Rotation is beneficial. Short-term rotations are beneficial, where the corn sorghum corn out yielded the sorghum corn corn or cotton cotton rotation, excuse me, and then they were all numerically higher than the cotton cotton rotations. Higher grain prices at the current time make these rotations economically feasible. However, we need to investigate increasing the duration of the rotation and maybe look at additional crops such as corn in areas where corn can't be produced. The cultural practices evaluated in these studies can be used to develop an integrated disease management system that can complement variety performance. With that, I'd like to acknowledge the funding of this work through Cotton Incorporated and Texas AgriLife Research, Ron Graves, our grower collaborator, and then the technical assistance of Andy Kramer, Doug Nismith, Victor Mendoza, Michael Petty, and Jacob Reed. With that, I'll be happy to take any questions. Yes, Terry.
Jason, you care to speculate at all on what the grain sorghum's doing to verticillium in that single year rotation? Stimulating the sclerotia to germinate and then not?
It could be the stimulation of sclerotia to germinate and then subsequent death. It could be that something in that crop, there's a lot of residue left with regard to sorghum, that it could be stimulating some antagonists. We haven't investigated that.